Welcome, travelers. We're aware that your journey was difficult, but prepare to have your questions answered, for you have been granted an audience with the Masters of Moth.
Welcome back to Masters of Modern. I am your host, Alex Kessler, here with my co-host, Ben Bateman.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to the show. Welcome back.
Yeah, we took a, kind of weirdly took a week off, but didn't.
Yeah, it was like a week and a half, but it was just like a weird spacing of episodes because something kind of crazy happened.
Yeah, so I am now engaged.
Yeah, so congratulations.
Woo! Yeah, there's a video you can watch online. I snuck onto an airplane, flew all the way to Atlanta, then back onto an airplane that my girlfriend was flying back to LA, and then proposed mid-flight.
It was wild. But it was a great video. It broke the internet, sort of.
The bad news was it delayed the episode because I was supposed to be editing, and instead I was flying across the country, shenanigans. So it came out last Monday, early last week. And so we were like, well, we don't want to release two episodes in 1 week. So now we're releasing it this week.
Yep, exactly. So now so Kessler's engaged.
We kind of skipped 2 weeks or 1 week. 2 weeks ago, we skipped 1 week. And then it was like after the pro tour, it was weird. We apologize. But yeah, so I'm engaged. This podcast continues on. And when the pro tour happened, and it was my birthday too, I guess. It was all the same day.
Yeah, it was a lot of things. Yeah, pro tour happened. That was exciting, except it was all Mardu vehicles.
Oh, nice band.
Yeah, right? Stuff. It was like, this is something really interesting, and I want to do this in a later episode, but just the evaluation of new card types is a really difficult thing to do properly, and I think it's really interesting that they banned Smuggler's Copter, and then they printed Heart of Kirin, and it was like, it felt a lot like watching the last Pro Tour, except they had just replaced one 2-drop piece of vehicle with another one, and like, the thing that I find so strange about that is that when a card is that good in the 2-drop slot, that is that dominant in a format, how neither of those cards has made an impact in Modern yet. That's crazy to me.
It's going to be really interesting because I've said for a while that I wish that vehicles would become evergreen because I think that they're comparable to the equipment, and I don't think you can have too much of both, but I think you could decide which planes have both. And I think Wizards has kind of come on board by saying that vehicles will be kind of deciduous, so they'll be kind of like hybrid mana, where they'll be able to kind of come out with them when they need to without it being necessarily a returning mechanic that the set has to be involved
with. Right. Like vehicles are only on Kaladesh, but you know, this set has to relate to Kaladesh for us to have them. They can put them in a core set. They can do
kind of like, you know, in Fate Reforged, there was the legendary creatures that all had hybrid activations. That was just a high profile cycle.
Yeah.
So like if they come to a plane and it's like, oh, Nicol Bolas has this legendary super train.
Yeah.
Well, I guess we need a vehicle. I guess we'll come out with Nicol Bolas's legendary super train, and then
that sounds so cool.
Yeah, see, everyone wants Wizards. Listen,
Nicol Bolas super train.
Yeah, let's do it.
What would the casting cost be?
Like 7.
It'd cost 7.
It'd be 5 Grixis.
The art would be unbelievable.
It would be so sick.
Nicol Bolas had like a conductor hat on.
I think he's like riding on top, and then just like it's got like his face as the like grill on the train.
And it's got the guitar guy from Mad Max Fury Road playing guitar on it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly all of this.
Yeah.
The Doof. That guy's called the Doof.
That guy's sweet.
Yeah, no, yeah. If you haven't seen Mad Max Fury Road, stop listening to this podcast and go watch that movie.
It's better. It's better than what we're doing.
Yeah, and it's basically what I would describe as Nicol Bolas' super train.
Yeah, unbelievable.
All right, so.
That's a thing.
Beyond that, I mean, back to the bannings. I do think when you look at what the format has become, I think the only card I really see that they banned and I'm like, oh man, that would have made a difference, that would have ruined the format, is Emrakul. Like, that made sense to me. The other two cards, now in hindsight, I'm like, how much better is Thopter than Kirin? And would that deck play all 8? Because I don't even know if it would. Yeah.
Yeah, hard to say. I mean, we don't really talk that much about Standard on here. It was interesting. I mean, there's nuance to
That's
it.
That's why it's in the news section instead of the Modern Masters section.
It was cool for sure to see the hyper efficient aggro curve of that deck.
I think it's one of those so because of the Countercat combo deck, which is basically Splinter Twin is in Standard right now. The Copycat deck, the entire format was kind of warped to defend against that deck. And because of that, Mardu vehicles who matches up very well against decks that are worrying about that deck instead, came out the gates being like, pew.
Yep, just like that.
And just vroom vroomed right into the six top eight slots.
Yeah, it was pretty wild. So that happened. Other big news items since we've talked to you guys last are there are no longer any high-profile major modern events at the pro level aside from Grand Prix.
I know, this is really disappointing. I mean, I hope Wizards notices that people, you know, like when we got rid of Pro Tours, we were pretty on board with that. I mean, Ben just rolled his eyes, but I think we understood what the Pro Tour, how the Pro Tour is a problem for Modern as a whole. And the World Championships having Modern was kind of our, like, you know, the carrot instead of the stick.
Yeah, you at least got to see the best players playing it in one, you know, multi-format event, which was like, you didn't have to make it. It was going to show up, you know, twice a year. And one of the, like this, it was like a, if you've made it to this level, you're good at all the formats. And
right.
It's a premier thing. We want to see you do your best thing with Modern. Like that was a cool thing for us to get to see.
Correct. And that's gone now, which kind of sucks. And the worrisome is that there's now no real pro level Modern tournament out there. And the people are saying this is going to kill Modern. Modern's dying. I think that is overblown. I don't think that's possibly true. It's still very popular. One of the reasons they feel comfortable doing this now is because it has such good store-level playthrough. The bigger issue is that now we only have GPs and they're lessening those in general. Like, they're lessening the coverage for GPs. So, yeah. Like, I think they need to come out with an invitational, something that'll be a high-profile Modern tournament.
I mean, but like,
and
why?
We've said this for a while.
Yeah, I mean, the unfortunate part is like, why would they? At this point, it's like the trajectory of this is so clear, and they're very aware of what they're doing. Like, it's not like this was like they're gonna try something and see how people reacted. It's like they got rid of the Pro Tour, and then they got rid of it from the World Magic Cup, and they've reduced coverage. It's like it's all very consistent with their idea, which is that we want this to be a fun format that people can play at a high level, but we don't want it to represent what competitive Magic is about.
I also think this is a little reactionary to Standard doing badly earlier this year. And you can see a lot of changes in the last 6 months to trying to make Standard more popular. You have the Standard bandings and them being more willing to ban cards in Standard. You have the change back to original rotation. You have multiple different play experience events that are meant to encourage people to play Standard, like the Standard Showdown last November, and then there's going to be a bunch of cool Standard stuff leading up to Amoket. So you have all these different efforts to make Standard more popular, and on top of that, pros have specifically the pros that sometimes Wizards has the largest ear of, or vice versa, have the Wizards, you know, have a voice at Wizards, generally don't like Modern as a professional level event.
Yep.
And I do think that them focusing on Modern in a way that isn't built in necessarily as the end-all be-all of that Pro Tour circuit, but a possible fifth or third version of a tournament that gets you the right points you need or pro points to be able to compete in those kind of tournaments is something that would be valuable. I don't think they're killing the format. I think they decided it's successful. Now, conspiracy theory, it's possible that the new CEO came on board. He was like, why are you promoting this thing that's not directly making us money? And we're going towards Magic Digital. And you know what Magic Digital looks like? The way the game has developed, we're going to have to start it more at Magic Origins and what's going to be available or included in this product. So you know what? Maybe we should slowly stop focusing on Modern. It's obviously done its job of what you wanted it to do to give value to cards in older format, but maybe too well. And so we need to kind of figure out how to do this. That's possible, but that's much more malicious and not understanding very well what the Magic player base is really interested in.
Right.
And very short-sighted.
Yeah, definitely short-sighted. I would be surprised by that.
And personally, bad for us.
yeah, definitely. And also all the talk of Frontier. I could see that there's some justification that maybe they focus on that instead or something like that. I'm not really sure. We'll see as things shake out. The bottom line is Kessler and I both have said for a long time we would be very interested in a couple times a year, you know, a twice a year Modern super event. That'd be awesome.
I'm even fine with once a year or even once every other year to coincide with Modern Masters. So you have the Modern Masters 2017 Invitational that basically you find the people that you could even like judge it specifically. Okay, these are the people that top aided Modern GPs this year. or last year, they all get invited.
Yeah. The best mod.
And then Hall of Famers get invited, and maybe, you know, what, like the top X people with pro points, and all of them get invited, and the prize is something.
Yeah, and you can have it. You can have it at the event center that you're having the Modern Masters release thing at. You can still have the limited event. It just runs at the same time, or maybe
They don't do a release event for, but you could do it. There's like definitely different ways you can go about it, and I think that's valuable.
The release event is the GP, basically. I mean, that's.
There's no GP this year.
I guess that's true.
Yeah, yeah. No, there's no big Modern Masters event this year. That's my point. This is kind of a good example of do it a co-event. Make it like a Pro Tour. Have a Modern Masters Limited.
When's the Super GP? When is that?
Super GP is in May, early June.
In late Vegas.
Vegas, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But that is Modern?
No.
It's not Modern.
No, there is Modern. There's Modern Legacy Standard.
That's
right. It's not Standard. Modern Legacy and Limited.
Got it. We're going to that.
Yeah, that's the plan.
Okay, cool.
It's very close by.
Sweet.
We could just jump on a train.
On a jet.
Specifically Nicol Bolas' train.
It's a super train.
Super train.
All right, guys. That's going to wrap it up for
new inside joke of the podcast.
News section. If you guys want to follow along with the conversation, we're on Twitter at the MMCast.
Yeah.
You can find Kessler at...
Cass Wiley.
You can find me at Ben Bateman Media. And
find us on Instagram at the MMCast. You can find us on YouTube which is Top Decking TV. And very important, you can find us on the Patreon. You know, we do this for free. We are purely here kind of offer our entertainment value to you guys this week. And we super appreciate anyone who's donating money to the Patreon. It helps us kind of do a little bit of extra content, do a little bit, you know, upgrade our equipment when we can. It also just helps us kind of continue and stay motivated and keep coming to this every week. And we really, really appreciate it. And we do brew episodes. Pretty much once a new set comes out, we'll do a brew episode about a modern deck using cards from the new set. So next week will be that episode. So yep. If you guys can please, if you donate to the Patreon $5 or more, you get to donate your specific brew and we'll highly prioritize any decks that use new cards.
We might even try to bring a guest on for that episode, like a pro or something.
So make sure to do that. And we love you guys for it. And now let's get on to the episode.
Yeah, absolutely. And be sure to check out the commands.
Oh, yes. Yes. Jimmy and Josh, Commander Content. It's the best. They released another game nights. I am not on this one, so I don't get the Resurrect Birthing Pod. But Jimmy, Josh, Craig, and other Josh all duke it out with some broken commanders.
Cool. All right, let's talk about today's episode, which is ranking
all 10
shards and wedges.
Now, this is going to be different than our set reviews, and this is going to be different than our normal top 10s because there are only 10. So this is just the official ranking. Similar to when we did all the top 100 cards in Modern, we have consulted card and magic scientists that did specific analysis on the format to decide what are the official ranking of the top 10.
Shards and Wedges. Yeah, the three color combinations and how they stack up. This is heavily weighted in the favor of the highest finishing best Modern decks.
And when we did it, there is history involved. We're, you know, like Birthing Pod or Splinter Twin Variants are in the running.
Yeah, definitely, because they were dominant in their time. It's interesting too. We tried to make sure we focused on actual three color decks as opposed to two color archetypes that sometimes will like
play splash a color.
Yeah, play like the one, you know, like the flip side of Ancient Grudge or something in your sideboard just so you can do it. Like,
right.
We, for the most part, tried to focus on the combinations and their importance.
And we avoided four color decks that kind of did the same as well. So we don't have like.
Yeah, we don't. We're not going to. We will talk about the version of Junk that, you know, played a Johnny Vengeance as its fourth color, but like not actually as a four color deck. We're considering that a three color deck.
So do you want to get into it?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right, so number 10. They hang out in the jungle. They got some snake people that aren't called snake people. It's Sultai.
Yeah, pretty underwhelming.
Yeah,
combo in Modern,
which makes me sad because Sultai is like my top tier favorite color combinations. But kind of in the history, there have been attempts at Delver, there have been attempts at Control. Neither have really made it for a while there, and this is like kind of its biggest claim to fame. Infect was originally a bug deck
because
it played the Black Flyer.
That's right, I forgot.
But it stopped doing that because it realized that just being straight up blue green was a much more valuable proposition.
Yeah, there's not really that much interesting stuff in Sultai and Modern. I mean, obviously you have all of the good cards that like.
Well, now you do get Abrupt Decay plus Snapcaster Mage. With Fatal Push in the format, I do think Sulta has a higher chance of trying to do something.
Fatal Push is everything, because basically Fatal Push used to be Disfigure. I mean, that's essentially when in that spot when you were trying to build that deck, you had to play some number of Disfigures. And that card's fine, but it's like not great.
Much worse.
Yeah. I mean, Snapcaster with Disfigure, again, it's fine. Or Dark Blast or something.
Disfigure, yeah. I think this is a much better situation, and I think there's a potential to see play. Well, I'm definitely interested in seeing. I mean, this deck theoretically should be the one that is best at delving.
Definitely. Yeah, 100%. I mean, I think when Chapin played his all-in,
his teamer.
Was it teamer?
Yeah.
Was it?
Because it played the exile the top card, Prowess Dude.
No. Different deck. He took, when he first took Angler.
Oh, that was Esper.
Was it Esper?
Yeah.
The
first time Angler did, yeah. That was Esper.
That was an Esper deck? Okay. Yeah, Sulta really hasn't done much. I think we can. It gets to play a lot of the best cards. I mean, it gets Snapcaster Mage, it gets Tarmogoyf.
The problem is all the colors don't work as well together as you'd want them to. Like, green and black compete with each other for, you know, what black does in Grixis, green offers. So, Tarmogoyf and Angler don't really go well together. And then, you're kind of straddling both strategies, and blue does really well with delve spells, but so why are you playing green instead of like red, which is just better because you're able to Snapcaster Mage Lightning Bolt instead of just have a Tarmogoyf. Like, they don't really work very well together.
Yeah, definitely. So that's 10. There's not too much to say. I would like to see people brew more with Sultai.
And this could change. I mean, there are now Fatal Push, so you now have a good removal suite or a full removal suite.
Yep. Moving on to number 9.
All right. These guys like it fast. They like it hard. They have orcs, and Colligan kind of hangs out with them. They are the Mardu.
Yeah, so interesting thing about Mardu. Here's the thing that jumps off the page about Mardu. You get to play Fatal Push, Path to Exile, and Lightning Bolt in the same deck. So now, like, that sounds pretty appealing. You can max out on really strong interactions.
I think Mardu gets a little bit less credit than it deserves. I think, not only that, you also get Colligan's Command.
Yeah.
There's a pretty sweet list of, control cards here that I think, and Mardu always kind of pops up once in a while. There's that period where I was playing, the Lingering Souls. I was playing the, Mardu Planeswalker token list was one of the last PTQ decks I ever kind of took to a PTQ. And the deck was sweet. I spent the entire summer playing it.
Didn't do very well, though, unfortunately, at that list. But also,
It did okay. I mean, the problem was Birthing Pod.
Colligan's Command didn't exist yet. Neither did Fatal Push.
Right.
Yeah, so.
No, there's a lot of good pieces of the deck. I think that's possible. You know, Aristocrat Shells always. There's a zombie Aristocrat decks. That's Mardu. This is another color combination that there's a lot of potential here. And I think there's more potential than necessarily Sultai, because I think there's a reason to play these colors. Sultai, are you just a worse Jund, Junk, or Grixis deck? Here, at least, it's no. Mardu is doing something different. It has these different synergies. They work in these specific ways. Plus, it just has every removal spell under the sun.
It's interesting, because in the past, you would have said, okay, blue, white, red is that's sort of the control deck du jour in Modern, the sort of counterburn deck, if you will. That's been the deck that people have played for a long time.
But counter magic's bad.
Yeah, but if you now that you have Fatal Push, if you think about this deck and what does blue give you? Gets you some weak counter magic and the best creature in the format, Snapcaster Mage.
Sure.
Strip away Snapcaster Mage and the weak counter magic, replace it with Hand Disruption and Lingering Souls. I mean,
yeah, I think you're doing fine. You lose Serum Visions, so you lose the little bit of deck manipulation. But black has, with between Bob and a few other cards, has some pretty decent card draw options.
Yeah.
I think you're fine. I think this is a really interesting.
I guess the other thing blue gives you that we're not mentioning here is Colonnade. Colonnade is very important, and that's something that you don't. The black red one's really bad. The white black one is just okay, and the white red one is pretty bad in Modern.
I would say that the black red one is actually better than people give credit for.
Lava Cloud Regis?
As a person who has played it,
we're talking about the man lands, by the way.
Yeah. In a very grindy control deck like this, where. I wouldn't want to play four. It's not a Colonnade-like card. It's not just bonkers like Colonnade. And I'd even think of playing a mix of the three main manlands. But the ability to just be oh, I win. Because you weren't paying attention. This land that you know is bad. You assume this land is bad. And because of that, you let me get to seven mana and then tap out. Or just don't have removal spells anymore because I've been killing all of your stuff. And I get in for 7 damage.
Yeah,
is like pretty strong.
I feel you. It's a land that dies to lightning bolt. That's a tough. That's a tall order.
Oh no, sure. And it's not a card I would ever rely on as my main win condition.
Yeah,
but it is a card that I love having as a surprise plan to victory, which is what man lands are more important to do anyway.
Except it's just the rare occasion of Colonnade, which is a 4+ in that deck because it's a 4/4.
Well, so, but in the blue white red decks, that's different because in the blue white decks, Colonnade is the
primary win condition.
That's the win condition.
Yeah.
Everything else is secondary. In this, your win condition is Lingering Souls.
Yeah.
Your win condition is a Planeswalker.
Your win condition is
Bitter Blossom. Your win condition is an amalgamation of other cards. Like, it's a different kind of conversation.
Yeah, that's fair.
All right, next.
Number eight.
They like to artifact. They're pretty big in artifacts. Tezzeret is from here.
Yeah.
They've somehow combined themselves with Ethereum. They may like to sculpt it. It's the Esper.
I love Esper. Blue, white, black. It makes me sad that Esper's this low. How is that possible?
Blue is bad.
No, it's not.
It could be better.
Yeah. I mean, when you talk about power level, it feels like Mardu's more powerful than Esper. It actually in my head now. Maybe that's just because of Fatal Push. But I love Esper. I think Esper's so awesome. I'm like so bummed that we haven't had more competitive Esper decks.
There's these new really sweet Esper token decks that use
Monastery Mentor?
No, the white expertise and Ancestral Visions.
Oh, sweet.
And well, I mean, the point is you just play that and you play it in the Lingering Souls and you have six, you know, power on the field and you're happy. But then sometimes you Ancestral Visions, you're like, ha-ha.
Yeah. Seems really good.
No, yeah, that's kind of one of the lists. You know, there's definitely been Esper. Most Planeswalker lists has kind of been in the Esper family.
Yeah.
Gifts decks have always been. The Gifts Reanimator decks have always been Esper.
Yeah.
And then there's just control decks. And now Esper has a chance of coming back finally because of Fatal Push. Esper was another color combination that was kind of hurt by the fact that black wasn't good at killing creatures. White only had Path to Exile, and you really need that eighth, those 5 through 8 removal spells, and Fatal Push kind of allows them to be there to really take advantage of what they're doing with Snapcaster Mage.
Yep, absolutely. Yeah, it's not too much to say about this. But those really cool decks for a while that were running around, the Monastery Mentor decks. Those are sweet.
And the one thing I'd say about Esper is, you know, a lot of people start to build these decks in kind of what Grixis is doing, which is Grixis is much more of a tap-out control counterspell magic. And I don't think white is better than red. I think given the opportunity, you should be playing a red card. Well, you should be playing Lightning Bolt over white in blue-black shells. If you're going for the tap-out control level, because Snapcaster Mage but Lightning Bolt is very strong.
Yep.
But comparing Esper to something like Abzan is a much more interesting place for me. Because in that format and with that deck, you're getting a combination that is blue better than green. And green is the strongest color in Modern, if I had to pick. But I would say that blue offers
one really good card.
Snapcaster Mage. But significant different ways that could be a strength over green. You get Snapcaster Mage, which is the obvious one.
Yep.
You get Serum Vision, so you get to be more consistent with your kind of, you know, what you're able to dig for. You get Ancestral Visions, which is a very deep digging card.
Yeah, really good. There's also
in the grindy matchups, it's very good.
You also do, I mean, just the color of blue and Modern, while counter magic may be bad, it's not always bad. It's not all bad. Like, there's some of those spells, like Spell Snare is a really good card.
Sure.
Spell Snare is awesome. Like, Cryptic Command, if you can play a deck that can support it, is insanely powerful. Well,
and some of these cards are much better with stuff like Liliana, where you can discard the Spell Snares if you're like, oh, they don't have the 2-drops I need to be able to get rid of. Or their 2-drop won't be matter anymore.
Is Spell Snare, like, seriously underrated?
I think it depends on the format and what the format looks like. It depends how many 2-drops are good.
We did our top blue cards kind of recently, I think, and it was like pretty high for both of us. I think it was higher for you than for me.
Yeah. I think it was, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think it's obviously an important card in the format. I think Esper, comparing it to Abzan, is a safer place to kind of start from and giving up kind of cool token deck versions of Abzan.
Yep.
All right, next. They are all about honor. They're the samurais / Jon Snows of the world. They have the right on lion beasts. They're the knights of old Bant.
Sweet.
Blue, green, white.
I've tried to build a bunch of Bant decks in Modern. There's a bunch of cool ones. There's the Bant Nightfall deck, which is really, really cool. That's the Retreat to Coral Helm mixed with Knight of the Reliquary creates this whole deal where every time a land comes into play, you get to untap the knight. And so if you fill your deck up, you can make your knight Gigantor. You can swing for, you know, 20, basically. I mean, I don't think you can swing for 20 because you can't play the right composition of lands to do that, but you can swing with a gigantic knight.
I think you can swing for 20.
Really?
Yeah.
Doesn't Knight read you have to sack a plains or forest?
Mm-hmm.
So you can't, you to be playing fetch lands also, you can't play that many. Unless I'm just like not thinking about those lists properly. I don't think you can get knight to 20.
They splash red.
They splash red?
I think so.
Okay. So in any case, yeah, that's like the primary Bant deck that's good. There's also been a Bant Collected Company deck that people play. I mean, obviously, the first thing that comes to mind when you think of a Bant card in Modern is Noble Hierarch. That's the best Bant card there is in Modern. And Noble Hierarch plays very well with Collected Company because you can get out of turn earlier. Yep,
their Bant Company decks were pretty popular back in the beginning of last summer when, like, basically there was like, or not two summers ago, where there's like three different versions of Coco decks. There's like Naya, Bant, and Abzan.
You can play Geist. It's pretty sweet.
I don't know if anyone ever did that.
Really? Hierarch into Geist and having Geist as part of your
company? I mean, that's the thing people do. I don't think that's part of company, though.
Oh, really? Yeah. Seems like awesome. Flipping one end of turn out of company.
Bant is Bant. I don't know. I think we rated this a little too high.
Bant?
Yeah. Like, thinking about it, I don't know.
I mean, there's also that Spirits list that just came out recently. The Caleb's list.
Oh,
Bant
Spirits? Oh, yeah.
That, like, took first place at, like, open or something like that. I mean, Bant's powerful.
As I said, scientists decide this list, and they say it's at 7, and who are we to judge?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, when you start to look at the things that are higher, though, I mean, maybe Esper, as you could argue, is close to being better, but I think because Bant gets to play Tarmogoyf. Like, Bant has Tarmogoyf, Bant has...
Sure.
Yeah, so anyway...
Yeah, I mean, I think the big things that Bant has done are stuff with Knight of the Reliquary is really important. It's kind of the best knight decks are
getting to play Hierarch and Goyf in decks is really good. Like those are very good cards.
All right, next they punch bears. They live in the tundra. It's Teemer, Rug, blue, red, green.
So blue, red, green is really interesting. I've loved to play Rug decks for a long time.
This is number six.
Yeah, hilariously enough, the most famous thing Rug ever did is not in Modern. It's in Legacy. Rug Delver, which was originally called Canadian Thresh, that's the most famous use of like the Rug colors that's existed. And it was it was a format-defining deck in Legacy that
we've talked, when Josh Kim was on the podcast, we talked about Rug Delver as a deck in Modern. It's never been a high tier, and now it's a little bit worse because Gitaxian Probe is gone.
Yeah.
R.I.P. Bedlam Reveler.
Yeah.
But Scapeshift is the premier Rug deck of Modern. Scapeshift decks have been around since they unbanned Tron or Valakut.
Yep.
And just the combination of good ramp spells plus
burn.
Really plus, not burn, but plus Cryptic Command plus mountains for Valakut was enough to kind of be one of the premier decks of the format. Its heyday was during the Scapeshift, not Scapeshift, the Delve days when
you could play Dig Through Time.
You could play Dig Through Time. That was kind of like it needs that extra tutor effect. And right now it's been a little bit more split between just straight red green or splashing colors so that you can play the Converge tutor.
Yeah, I mean these decks were like sweet. I remember one summer playing against a lot of Scapeshift decks and like those decks would play what's the counterflux? You'd play counterflux in the sideboard so that when you got into that mirror situation, you could play the uncounterable counter so you could make sure your combo got off. And then on top of that, I actually remember playing against Scapeshift decks that were playing Bolt and Snap and just dying to Bolt, like to attacking Snapcaster Mages and Bolts. Like game two, you know, boarding out all my removal and just dying to Bolt, Snap, Bolt, like attacking Snapcaster Mages. That's the thing these decks can do. And then
play Inferno Titan on turn 4.
Yeah, exactly. They play Inferno Titan. Yeah. So that's really good. I mean, the Rug Delver decks, that's the thing people have tried forever. And sometimes they've been good. There was that Chapin list we talked about just a minute ago where he was going all in with like Prowess Guys and I guess probably Young Pyromancer was in that deck.
Yeah.
And like Mishra's Bauble and all these things. And that deck was cool. But there hasn't been that many like massive Teemer decks. There's only a couple iterations that have really made much of an impact.
Yeah, I think the reason this is rated so high, if you look at the colors before this, none of them really have a premier deck that was their thing. that was like a tier one deck in the format, in the history of the format, really.
Yeah, none of those other ones.
Versus Rug has Scapeshift.
Yeah, I guess Esper having the old Gifts decks, that was a defining deck for a minute. Early on.
But that was, I would say that had more to do with the format not being solved and less to do with them actually being good.
I would agree. And Scapeshift is definitely a premier deck. And I would put Rug Delver's as good and as format defining a deck as any deck in the lists below it. It's like Rug Delver's as good as the best deck in any of the color combinations below it, I think. What's better than Rug Delver?
I'll give you that.
I think it's as good as all the rest. And I think, you know, Scapeshift is one of the six.
I think Saltai's Infect, which we like, is the only combination there. But like Blue-Green Infect is so much more what Infect was.
Yeah.
That it's a little harder for me to say that that's the premier version of Infect. Yeah, no, I'll agree.
I think that's kind of where you stand there. Scapeshift is like a top six all-time modern deck, so top seven maybe. And so I think
ten. I'll put it in top ten. I think top sevens. I think I could maybe name seven decks that are above it.
Scapeshift all-time in the format?
Birthing Pod, Splinter Twin, Jun, Abzan Company, Abzan Regular,
I think that's
Infinity,
right.
Infinity, Infect, Eldrazi.
You're talking about short. There's extended dominance of Scapeshift on the level of several of the decks you just mentioned. Eldrazi existed. Oh, yeah.
But I can name three other decks. I'm just being lazy. I'm saying I got past seven, and all those decks I'd put above Scapeshift. Maybe not Eldrazi. Eldrazi gets a swing because of the fact that it ruined Modern for an entire year.
Maybe it's eighth or ninth, but like definitely top ten. So anyway, continuing to move on.
Saying something is in the top ten doesn't mean it's number ten. It just means it's
No one
has a top seven.
Yeah, but that's just when you say that, when you're like one of the, you know, like Bill Simmons will be talking about like his basketball players, and he'll be like, you know, you've got the 22nd best player of all time on your team. Like, you know, it suggests that he has like his science figured out at all times of exactly the best players. I like the idea that like we know Scapeshift.
Ben, we're not the magic scientists. The people that put this list together and put Scapeshift at number six are the card scientists.
All right. Fair enough.
All right. Number five, they do martial arts. They hang out with bird people. They live on the top of mountains and may have some maybe pretty prowess. What's the? I don't know how to say that. They have prowess. It's the Jess guy, blue, white, red. Probably of the color combinations, the one I've played the most of here. Yeah. I mean, different versions of Tempo, Delver, Control, Burn, blue-white-red decks have existed since the history of the modern format existed. Right now, Nahiri decks are kind of probably the most popular versions of those. Geist, Team Geist, fan favorite of the podcast,
Alex Kessler favorite.
The classic move of lightning bolting things in the way of Geist so that he can punch someone in the face using Snapcaster Mage and lightning bolts around. Just the combination of just really good removal with Snapcaster Mage. And for a while, the best removal in the format is really what this deck was, is it's Path and Lightning Bolt and Snapcaster Mage.
Yeah, I mean, people would
go.
It's funny. Yeah, exactly. It's funny. Like, people would talk about this deck in the early days as though, like, there was, like, this really complicated, you know, complex play to it and flashing in a guy and beating for two with a Snapcaster Mage, like, kind of in the way that Twin, straight blue-red dominant Twin, would play for a long time. When you actually looked at the list, though, and you broke the cards down, it's just like, every single card was like removal or burn
or flash
or colonnade. And like that was the whole deck. And like,
well, Snapcaster Mage, I definitely played a lot of this deck using Restoration Angels.
Yeah. Okay. That's fair. The primary version, though, I just remember playing against, and it's just like, what's in your deck? And it's like all Path to Exiles, soft counter spells, lightning bolts, Snapcaster Mages, electrolyzes, helixes. It's
removal spells and flash spells and colonnade.
It's just like if there was ever going to be a deck that just came down to
now
like,
there's Nahiris that get you Emrakul's in play.
That's like more interesting. But I'm saying if they're ever in the old days,
Kiki-Jiki, Resto Angel ones that were around forever.
This is the most Bolt
Splinter Twin on Wall of Omens.
This is the most Bolt Snap Bolt deck that I think ever has existed.
In modern? This or Grixis are the premier Bolt Snap Bolt decks of
this
format.
But this was Bolt Snap Bolting long before Grixis had any popularity.
True. And this Bolt Snaps Bolts with the intent of punching them in the face.
Yeah.
Where Grixis Bolt Snaps Bolts as their like late game plan. This one's like, no.
Yeah.
Those lightning bolts are punching you in the face, and then there's going to be a Geist, and it's going to also punch you in the face.
Like, this deck relied on Bolt Snap Bolt to win, usually.
Yeah. Yep. Okay. All right. Are we good here?
I think Blue-Eye Red, that's pretty much the gist of it. I mean, you mentioned, yeah, the various, you know, Kiki.
And yeah, there's Kiki Twin decks. There's been Delver decks. There's been Geist decks. There's been Control decks. Nahiri.
Yeah.
Wall of Omens has always been kind of a thing that's shuffled in and out of the deck, depending on how important blocking ground creatures were or being able to have an ETB to draw cards.
Yep. Yeah, it's pretty much, I mean, you're just combining Lightning Bolt, Path
to Exile. Electrolyze is really important here, actually. I think that gets less credit than it should. But
yeah, this is a deck that combines three cards really well. Path to Exile, Snapcaster Mage, and Lightning Bolt. That's the gist of the deck.
Yeah,
so
I'll give you that. All right, next, they hang out with demons. It's apparently not a really fun place to live. They sometimes unearth their pals and bring them into play. It's Grixis. The Swamp Kings.
Fan favorite blue, recently black, on the podcast. Red.
Both Chapin and Patrick Chapin and Corey Burkhart's namesake color combination.
Yeah, this is we've had Grixis Control, we've had Grixis Tempo, we've had Grixis Delver, Goryeo's Vengeance. This is a pretty highly ranked color combo. Some might argue this is ranked too highly, actually. If you look at the decks that we just named, Grixis Delver was always just okay, just pretty good, but not crazy good. I think
Corey's modern success over the last year and a half, specifically with this deck, allows it to be as high as it is.
I agree.
And the fact that there are Goryeo's Vengeance decks, there's two types. There's the ones that are controlling that play Jace, and this. I mean, these are the best Jace, Prince Prodigies decks out there.
Yeah.
I think it's a completely fair placement of it. I mean, it's also
just super sweet. Yes. Yeah, just super awesome. I mean, I love some of the cards that get to be played in Grixis decks these days. I love that people are playing Counter Squall. I love that people play Rise Fall. I love that you get to play like Kolaghan's Command and Snapcaster Mage.
The Rise Fall play with Emrakul. Have you seen that move?
No.
You cast off of the red expertise.
Yeah.
So you get to cast both Rise and Fall for 3 mana because you put it in the play, and it. Maybe I'm not thinking of Risefall correctly. Risefall is you mill 8 and then you reanimate.
No, that's breaking entering.
Sorry, breaking and entering. So you breaking, milling 8, and then you enter the Emrakul because the Emrakul trigger of shuffling your graveyard doesn't resolve until after it comes into play.
Yeah, that seems sweet.
Yep.
It seems real powerful.
So welcome to the world of expertise.
Risefall is a way, way, way less like breakable card. It's just real simple, and it's just you're just playing the Rise half. But
that's the discard. The discard.
No, it's blue black. Return target creature on the battlefield to its owner's hand, and return target creature in a graveyard to its owner's hand. So you get to bounce your own Snapcaster Mage and bring back a dead Snapcaster Mage, and then replay a Snapcaster Mage to replay the Risefall to get the it's very silly. They only play one copy of it, but it's similar to like what Kolaghan's Command does with Snapcaster Mage.
Got it.
Similar kind of a feeling. But yeah, it's just awesome. And Counter Squall, I love that Corey plays two of those in his decks. That's so cool.
Yep, I agree.
Yeah, Grixis is awesome.
Next.
Yeah, next number one. Three, right?
All right. Number three, we're in the top three. These guys worship people that are really big, big monsters. They live in the forest. They got some cat people, Nikodles walking around. They, they may have bought a zoo.
Ewan McGregor.
It's not Ewan McGregor.
We bought a zoo?
Yeah.
Matt Damon?
Yeah, Matt Damon.
And Ewan McGregor, I think.
Ewan McGregor's in We Bought a Zoo?
You
look it up while I describe. We're talking about Naya, also known as White Red Green. Premier card, Wild Nikodle, which says if you have it is a green mana for one, and if you have a plains and a mountain, you have a 3/3. Gets +1/+1 for each of those, so it's the premier Naya card. There are a few different archetypes. The main one, which is where the zoo joke comes from, is Zoo, which is the premier aggressive deck that features cards like Wild Nikodle, like Curd Ape, which is why it's called Zoo, because you got apes and cats and tigers and bears. Oh, my.
Wow, you were right. Ewan McGregor is not in We Bought a Zoo. You've actually seen that movie, haven't you?
I don't know if I've watched the whole movie, but I do pay attention due to Ewan McGregor's status as Obi-Wan Kenobi to generally what movies he's in.
Got it. Okay.
I would say, it's more about him than the movie.
Yeah, okay.
So Zoo. The other big one, and this is the place where it's seen the most play, I think, in the format, is Burn. Burn currently is Naya Burn. It plays those three colors. That is the place that this color combination sees the most play. And Naya Burn is both good in general and really good right now.
Yeah, I mean, look, let's be honest. Nia Zu was the earliest best deck in Modern, right? In the very beginning of the format. I think there was...
I'm gonna call Cloud Post.
Okay, but that's like... I guess I'm talking post-first Pro Tour. Like, but...
Wouldn't the Pro Tour be the earliest moment?
Yeah, all right, fine, you're right. It's one of the early. It's one of the earliest best decks. It was like a thing people played a lot of.
No. Within 6 months of the format being banned, Zu got two cards banned out of it.
Yeah, there was also, though, versions that played blue, I remember, back in those days.
Counter Zu?
Yeah, Counter Cat, they would call it. But, yeah, I mean, Nia Zu is a thing, and has been a thing, and continues to be a thing year after year. And then, of course, Nia Burn, which is, I would say, the more dominant deck of the two. Nia Burn is...
Oh, no, absolutely.
Yeah, Nia Burn's like... That's definitely a top 10 deck.
Yeah. That definitely might like said
top,
all this.
That might even be like a top 5 deck.
I don't know if I said it is a top 10 deck, but I definitely...
Just said all that?
Yeah, yeah. Right, when you were looking up Ewan McGregor's status as a cast member of We Bought a Zoo.
It's funny. It's funny how often this happens.
But beyond that, there's also the Koka Nia decks and the big Nia decks that Brian Kibler was really a focus on earlier on in the format's history, where he would be playing Domri Raid... And just, you know, Knight of the Reliquary. I think there's, you know, Nia offers a lot of big beefy dudes, and they like to get in there.
Yeah, what's really interesting about Nia is that while you have like Grixis, there's a lot of flavors of Grixis. People brew with it a lot. I don't feel that people brew with Nia that much. Do you know what I mean? There's the two main decks we're talking about, and past those two main decks, you've got kind of memories of Kibler playing some stuff. But like, I really genuinely feel like Nia's defined by those two top tier decks. And then not much else, right? Like when you try to come up with clever, cute, interesting things to do in Modern, it rarely is like in the colors of Nia because they're pretty straightforward as far as what they're trying to do.
Big beefy dude trying to punch other people in the face.
Yeah. So, but I mean, it largely is successful just on the back of two premier decks. Both of those two decks are in the top 15.
Well, Koko Nia was a real thing.
Yeah.
6 months ago or a year ago. No, like, it definitely was.
Same like, time as like, yeah. Bant Koko and all that. Yeah.
It's more of a real thing than Bant Koko.
Got it. All right, moving on.
Moving on. All right, top two. These guys are stalwarty. Gavin Verhey was known as their captain during the creation of the set that these guys originated in. They may have a lot of junk in their trunk. They are the Abzan.
Junk in their trunk. Look at you.
Yeah.
Making jokes.
Bringing up the puns.
Abzan, yeah, really interesting one. Abzan is famous for really...
Which is black, white, green, for those who don't know. Famous for rhinos. Famous for... two decks. It's really two decks. There's the white versions of Jund, which focused on Path to Exile over Lightning Bolt.
Which took a while. They really took a while to gain prominence, to come to prominence in Modern.
Well, because I think it needed... Part of the reason Jund was the black, white, red was so dominant with Bloodbraid Elf.
Yeah.
Once Bloodbraid Elf went away, people realized... Oh, there's like Lightning Bolt or Path is better right now. This is a deck that doesn't care that much that you have more mana than I need to because I've stripped all the cards out of your hand anyways using Discard and Liliana.
These days, you don't see as much straight Abzan as you used to. You don't just see people choose to play it. I would think they often would err on the side of Jund, but it is still a deck. People will still show up playing it as just a straight up, like, I don't think you really see Rhinos hardly anymore, though.
No, I think Rhino is what's kind of lost weight. Cause, I mean, in reality... Abzan has existed very early. It was originally just part of Jund.
Yep.
Because they would play Lingering Souls, splashing Lingering Souls or splashing a Johnny Vengeant off of Deathrite Shaman. So it was allowing them to kind of split the difference. And then when Bloodbraid Elf got banned, they were like, oh, well, Lingering Souls is still real good.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, so there's original version of Abzan, and then there's also the fact that Birthing Pod was one of the all-time most dominant decks in the format.
And it was an Abzan deck.
And then once they banned Birthing Pod, in pretty short order, it just adopted Collected Company.
3 months it took for Collected Company to come out.
And then that became the new version. Yep. And
the Malira combo decks came right back. And
they printed in Offenza, so now you had more options. Yep. Like, this has just been a thing for a long time. The highly underrated part of these decks that people... We've talked about it a lot, but people forget sometimes, is that the card Gavinny Township is so good.
Yeah.
And, like, it works so well with, like, Kitchen Finks and all your things with counters and Wall of Roots. So, like, these decks can go wide or they can combo you out. And that's why they're good.
I think from a uniqueness effect, Gavinny Township might be in the top five best lands in the format.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, Gavinny Township is I think, still criminally underrated. It's like, it's one of the linchpin cards. I mean, we're talking about the second highest rated three-color combination in Modern, And I would argue, without the printing of Gavinny Township, there's a good chance that this color combination is lower on the list. Because without that card and the ability to reset your counters and go wide, I don't know that those combo decks are as good as they've been for so long. I think
sure, I definitely think it adds a lot. I mean, it's one of the reasons you can play four birds and four Noble Hierarch. When I mentioned that if I were to build an Esper deck right now, I'd be comparing it to Abzan the most. The one problem I always ran into was, does Colonnade do enough of a job to replace Gavinny Township? And I think it's close, but I don't think it's enough. I don't think it's completely... I don't think it's better. I think Gavinny Township is a better card than Colonnade.
Yeah, I would agree. I would agree. It just enables your deck to do a lot more.
More insane.
It's also...
It makes so many more of your hands better.
Yeah, Township also really... When you talk about like people forgetting, like they do with Lava Claw Reaches, like it.
Oh yeah.
It just, you can just blow people out. It just wrecks people if they're not the kind of player that's hyper aware of your lands, and you have that buried under a Temple Garden and they don't see it. Like you can just, like you can end the game in one combat sequence.
Yeah. Which you know, it's best to always keep your lands presented, make sure don't hide your lands, but also pay attention to your opponent's lands because people will do that. So I mean, obviously this is one of the best decks in the format.
Interesting enough, though, again, you kind of have the same thing going on, which is basically that if you say Birthing Pod and Collected Company are kind of like the same deck, that basically that and Abzan, straight Abzan decks, are the only dominant things this combination's ever presented. Now, that's two of the most dominant decks ever.
Well, yes and no. Like, remember, one of the reasons Birthing Pod got banned was because it basically was like, oh, these are 12 different decks all in one. Like, you can say...
all the different builds of it.
Angel Pod versus Kiki Pod versus... which true. Wasn't... I mean, Kiki Pod was technically, I think, four color, but...
yeah.
Or you have Malira Pod, and then you have Cord Coco with the combo, and then you have Cord Coco without the combo, like...
yeah, definitely.
There's a lot of different things you can do here, but when it comes down to it, there are two main game plans.
Yeah, definitely. And you'll still see this. If you were to run, you know, if you were to run five modern tournaments, you would find Abzan decks in the top 16, you know, occupying at least 20% of every one of them. Like, it's just too good. It's just too good.
I'd say 10%, but that's, I would say, yeah, 10% is, I would bet for sure on 10%.
You can see 20 at some. Yeah. It just feels like it's a very safe thing. It's a safe move by a pro to play the straight version. It's a safe move by a good pro
with,
to play the
with
combo
Dredge
version.
Gone, I'll agree with you. Because the problem is, when Dredge was around, Abzan kind of took a back seat because Graveyard Hate became so
such
prolific.
A thing. Yeah, right.
And Abzan versus the next color combination, the last one, is much weaker as the to Graveyard Hate specifically.
Yeah, when people are like playing a lot of decks with like a lot of main deck Scavenging Oozes and they're playing a lot of like Rest in Pieces and things like that, you definitely are a lot worse.
Yeah,
so.
Both like or yeah, what's the you can't play cards from your deck. One mana artifact, Graf Digger's Cages. Graf Digger Cages are like in main sideboards of most decks, like Abzan Company becomes really bad. And then when people are playing just Rest in Peace cards, you're like Lingering Souls just become way worse.
Yeah, it's amazing. That just makes me think when you're talking about that how underrated of a card Scavenging Goose still is. Like, it's really good, and it, like when it was popular in Legacy before they reprinted it, it was everybody's like, oh, this is the second Tarmogoyf. But then it kind of has like faded off. People don't like remember or talk about it. Like, but it is so good. That summer I played.
Yeah. I think people remember it. It's just it's a role player that is really dirt cheap because they released it as a video game promo that the video game was free.
I know. It's just every time that whole summer playing Superior Burning Coco, every time I would draw this, I'd be like, I should just be playing four of these in the deck. It's just that good. Like because against Abzan Company, it's so good.
Yeah, it's really good against
them.
And last but not least, they hang out with dragons. They may even worship them.
They resurrect the dead.
They eat people. No, they don't. They're the devourer. They're the devourers.
Oh, I was just thinking about the deck, the resurrection.
Oh.
And then they also go real aggressive with killing themselves, but also trying to kill you.
Who needs a life total when you're dead? That is Jund. Wow, that was...
You peaked hard.
I peaked hard. I apologize for people's ears there.
Jund, the all-timer deck, the original OG dominant
Jund.
Modern deck.
Like, black, white, red.
What?
Sorry.
Red,
black,
green,
red, green.
Black. the original, like Blood Red Elf was banned. You know, Green Sun Zenith was banned for different reasons, but like...
Yeah, there's not many more fairer decks that have had as many cards banned out of it.
Deathrite Shaman, like this...
Oh yeah, thinking of Green Sun Zenith... Zoo had three cards banned out of it at the same time.
This deck is, the Jund deck, the straight Jund deck has been a mainstay in Modern forever.
Like, it's the premier control deck. It's the premier mid-range deck. It's the premier,
It was only gone for like a month, I feel like.
Hot second.
Like, when they banned Bloodbraid Elf and Deathrite Shaman, they were different bannings, right?
There are different times that those cards got banned. But there are some times that Junk replaced Jund.
Yeah, exactly.
As, like, the deck you should be playing of these three colors.
Yep.
But it would generally bounce back and forth. I would argue it's, if not the best deck in Modern's history, the top three.
Well, and then, so spiraling off of that, you also then have Living End, which is a Jund deck, because you have played Demonic Dread and also Violent Outburst, which are a black-red and a green-red card.
Yep.
And then on top of that, you have the Death Shadow Zoo decks, which have been super aggro and really, really good recently, and those are Jund.
And very recently, you had Dredge.
Yeah, it's true.
Dredge was a straight Jund deck. I mean, like, you had Narcomoebas, but you didn't cast them.
And because the original version that people played a few years ago was Sultai, but then they printed these really good red cards that made Jund really unfair.
Yeah. And the problem with Sultai was always Vengevines were never good enough in this format, as much as it breaks my heart. and Hedge and Crab is cute, but not as good as just Faithless Looting.
Yeah, definitely.
And Cathartic Reunion.
Yeah, those cards are insane.
And like, what's the, oh man, I'm forgetting it. I even have it in my backpack. Ugh, it's red, XX, discard.
XX, discard.
Flashback, X damage to things.
Conflagrate?
Yes.
Yeah.
Card's insane.
Yeah, card's really
especially
good.
Especially in this deck.
Yeah.
And then you just play Dredgers and you have those are red, black, and green.
Times
deck's
card.
Really good.
Love that card. Jund is nuts. Jund is like just full of good things. You get to play Tarmogoyf, you get to play Lightning Bolt, you get to play Thoughtseize. Those are all good cards.
Yep.
You get to they don't really play really play Bob so much these days. But
no,
then
they do. No, they definitely do.
Then they printed Grimflare.
Now there's more aggressive ones to play Grimflare, Bob, Tarmogoyf that are a little bit more aggressive than
you
they
get
used
to play Ooze. I mean, it's just full of good cards.
Conversation is always what four drop you're gonna play right now.
Is it good Chandra or are they not playing that right now?
Good Chandra. I've seen some play new Chandra. I've seen some a lot play the Black Demon from or the Black Vampire.
Kalidus.
Kalidus
is a
big one.
I feel like that's actually the most common one these days.
I think that is the most common. And Kieran is another one that is better when more Infect or Affinity are kind of seeing play because you have the be able to kill the things and they block kind of like Lingering Souls.
In the old days, you've had like Huntmaster of the Fells. You've had Olivia Voldaren. You've had all kinds of four drops since the banning of Bloodbraid Elf, which they probably will unban at some point, I would think.
Yeah, I don't think it's too good for the format. We've talked about this more often than I can actually count, but unban Bloodbraid Elf.
Yep.
Make Jund great again.
Yeah, Jund is, I think, far and away, no question, the strongest three-color combo in Modern.
Yeah.
So
there you go. Those are the top 10 decided not by us, but by Card Scientist. You can tweet at those Card Scientists at the MMCast and yell at them there. If you think the list is great, though, tell us. I'm at Kes Wiley.
I'm at Ben Bateman Media.
Make sure to check us out on Instagram, Facebook,
all
Twitter,
the places,
YouTube, Patreon, as I said before, really important, helps us get by.
Yeah.
We definitely appreciate it, guys. It's the way we're able to do this every week. So we appreciate everything you guys do for us, and you make our lives better. And we hope we make your guys better by providing entertainment. And then check out Collecting.company. Jimmy and Josh, awesome Commander content. Who doesn't like Commander?
Who doesn't like Commander? And I'm doing John Wick 2 on my action movie show this week, Action Movie Anatomy on the Popcorn Talk Network. So check that out, popcorntalknetwork.com or youtube.com/thepopcorntalknetwork.
Cool.
Thanks for listening, guys.
Yeah.
See you later.
Bye.
Thank you for your attention. See you later, alligator.